The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Offside Rule WSL edition. It was goals galore at the weekend with a total of 13 across four WSL games. So let's get cracking and talking about all the action. Coming up on this show.
Unstoppable. Chelsea surpass the WSL unbeaten record and extend their run to 33 games without defeat after victories over Aston Villa and Tottenham.
The title chase is still on. Wins for United and City keep the pressure on the table-topping Blues.
Beard's Bristol bounce. Matt Beard secures Bristol City's first win of the WSL season and kickstarts the Robins' fight against relegation.
We'll also be hearing from England and Birmingham City goalkeeper Hannah Hampton on her impressive season. I'm Lindsay Hooper, joined by Kate Borsay as ever and Tim Stillman from Arseblog. Tim, welcome along again. We haven't spoken to you for a while. Where were you this weekend?
Well, I made an abortive trip to Walsall for Aston Villa versus Arsenal until I got an email when I was around about Watford to tell me that the game had been postponed for a waterlogged pitch.
Oh, that's so annoying, isn't it?
Indeed, second weekend in a row that I got as far as kind of North London, Hertfordshire area.
We should be taking the mickey out of you, really, shouldn't we, Tim? The fact that Arsenal haven't won all year. I mean, it's a shocker.
I know. I feel really left behind. But I did manage to get back in time to watch Chelsea versus Spurs and Everton versus Manchester United, which might make me more useful to this podcast, actually.
Yes, exactly.
Not before we ask one more question, though, Tim, I think.
Sure.
This postponement, the waterlogged pitch, what I wanted to know from you is, given the form since Dubai Gate happened, was this good or bad for Arsenal that it was postponed?
I think bad for Arsenal, actually, because there's still some kind of bad air from Dubai Gate, and they had a bad result against Reading, and they haven't been able to clear that, really. But I think what's most worrying for me is the next two games are Manchester City and Chelsea, and Arsenal haven't played a game. They've played once in 7 weeks going into those games, and I do worry about that, I have to say.
I think you're right, Tim, in terms of those next two fixtures. They're going to be huge now, aren't they? Well, let's get stuck into the first game of the weekend, and it was a big win for new Bristol City boss Matt Beard.
Now Brighton can clear. Amy Palmer and Carla Humphrey in central midfield, and then Molly Pike making her debut on loan from Everton as Daniels has a goal. Oh, what a goal from Yana Daniels. What a brilliant goal. That is a great way to start. Ball forward for Salmon. Salmon has got there ahead of Letizia. Ebony Salmon for 2-0. She just doesn't miss. She wasn't going to miss. And it's her fourth of the season. And Bristol City go 2-0 up. Is that a handball from Williams? Penalty given. Bristol City have the chance to make it 3-0. Salmon scores. What else did you expect? The teenage sensation does it again for Bristol City, who are 3-0 up and closing in on a first home league win in nearly 2 years.
What a superb early strike from Yana Daniels and two goals from Ebony Salmon secured Bristol City's first win of the WSL season, 3-0 against a Brighton side who went down to 10 players when Kayleigh Green was sent off in the 68th minute. The victory means that Bristol climb within 2 points of Villa and West Ham. So a great result for Matt Beard. Tim, what was the difference in this game? What do you see happening there at Bristol?
I thought I watched Bristol again against Aston Villa in the Conti Cup as well, and I appreciate that was the Conti Cup, but what I think this result and that result does is it proves that Bristol can compete with the teams around them, and that could be really, really important in terms of staving off relegation. But I did think there was a difference in Bristol. They still had their solid defensive shape, but they had a lot more going forward this time. It wasn't just a case of, when I've watched them in the past, it's been very, very dependent on finding Ebony Salmon with long balls, but they got players up to support her this time, like Yana Daniels, like Carla Humphrey, and I just felt they carried a lot more threat going forward than I've seen before, and I think that was really the difference in this game.
And just the right opposition for them to play, Tim, I think, in Brighton. On the last couple of podcasts that we've done here, we've spoken about their spiralling form, and I think it was evident in this performance again. Defensively, I just think that they're nothing like the side they were at the start of the season. They're not clearing balls out of the box. They're giving players too much space. I really felt sorry, actually, for Letizia. The pace that Ebony Salmon showed for that first goal in behind, I mean, she left her for dust. She was literally looking at the back of her boots, wasn't she? And the thing is, if you can't have a turn of pace as a defender, then your positioning is key. If you're coming up against a player like that, then it's all about being a little bit of a step ahead of, in terms of where your brain is and your positioning on the pitch. And they weren't playing it like that. And let's admit, you know, this is a first home league win for Bristol City in nearly 2 years. And I think that shows a little bit where Brighton are at the moment. I wrote down toothless. I just think that they need a defensive coach. I mean, we'll come on later in the show as well to West Ham. But I think some of the teams towards the bottom of the WSL really need defensive coaches at the clubs. I think they're not clearing balls out the box, and that's just cardinal sin to me.
I think you can tell Brighton are in a real funk confidence-wise, and obviously they conceded really early in this game to a goal I don't think they could do an awful lot about. But what's interesting is a lot of the teams at the bottom have changed their managers. Villa have made a managerial change. Obviously, Bristol's is a bit forced because Tanya Oxtoby is on maternity leave. Spurs have changed manager. Villa have made a change, and it just makes me wonder about Brighton, whether, you know, things have maybe gone a bit stale under Hope Powell. And I think you saw a loss of discipline as well in the second half with the red card, and that usually to me is a bit of a sign of an unhappy team.
I agree, Tim. The frustration that caused that red card, and there's no forgiving it, Kayleigh Green stamping on Yana Daniels, and they sort of tangled up, and then Kayleigh Green sort of swung her body over, and in that process then unleashed a stamp on Yana Daniels. So it was, there was no debate about the fact that it was a red card. And it's not really something you like to see in the women's game either. And I just wonder whether those players at Brighton still believe in Hope Powell as much as they have done. Does she still carry the support of the whole team? And maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I completely echo your opinion on confidence. And Lindsay, you've mentioned spiralling as well. It does feel like that for Brighton at the moment.
Yeah, and I think that we've mentioned as well that there are a few key players missing, but you know, you go through it, there are probably four regular first teamers that Hope Powell's had to adjust around. And I think she should be able to do that. You know, we're not talking about a colossal number of players. And I think as well with the academy and bringing players through, that's what she should be looking to try and bring out the best, and people fighting for their places to try and get a regular spot in the first team if there are players missing. And I'm not seeing that fight. I'm not seeing that from them at the moment. And it's really alarming because now Bristol to climb within the 2 points that you mentioned, Kate, of Villa and West Ham. Wow, they will be feeling really re-energised now, thinking we could potentially get out of this. And I think 4 games ago, you would have written them off.
Yeah, and actually, when you look at Brighton, how's this going to make them feel in terms of what Bristol are doing? If I was Brighton or any of those bottom teams, Villa, I'd be incredibly anxious. It just ramps that up, doesn't it? The fact that they are now, you know, not out of the chase for relegation, and that it's not a nailed-on Bristol relegation, I'd be extremely anxious. So it should really mix things up a bit, actually, as we come into this second half of the season.
Instead of taking up that gym membership that you wouldn't use even if the gyms were open, how's about subscribing to The Athletic for just £4 a month as a New Year's resolution? You'll get unrivaled football coverage with analysis and in-depth features from the very best writers around, exclusive Q&As with Athletic staff, and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts, including this one. Find out more and sign up today at theathletic.com/offside.
On to Chelsea against Tottenham next. It was the early kickoff on Saturday. Rian Skinner's 100% record as Spurs boss came to an end at the hands of a seemingly unstoppable Chelsea side, who extend their record unbeaten run to 33 games. Melanie Leopold's opened the scoring with a fantastic goal from range. There was an Abby McManus own goal on her debut, a Sam Kerr header as well. That added two more before half-time. Leopold's got her second of the game from the penalty spot and secured this 4-0 win for Chelsea. I'll start him by saying that yes, it was a comprehensive victory, but Spurs started this one pretty bright.
Yeah, they really did. They had lots and lots of chances, and I know I was watching it thinking if they still had Alex Morgan, I think one of those chances would have gone in, because there was some, I think, some quite poor finishing from some really, really good situations. And actually, I had a kind of idle thought as well. I was surprised that Jane Ross didn't leave Manchester United during the window. And I really wondered whether Jane Ross on loan to Spurs would have been a really good move for all parties, because Spurs are not a bad team at all, but they don't have that finisher up front. And I think that's been a problem for them all season, and maybe a fitter, sharper Alex Morgan or a January transfer window loan like Jane Ross would really help them kick on to the next level.
You're spot on with that, Tim, because I thought as well, when you're comparing different teams, if you compare Spurs, who are a very good team, like you say, with Everton, similar sorts of areas of the table, probably similar ambitions. Everton bought in Govan and Spurs have really relied on maybe Kennedy getting the goals for them rather than an out-and-out striker, and definitely without Morgan as well. Let's move on to the Chelsea dominance then in this one, Kate, because the goals came. Sam Kerr looked pretty good in this one as well, I thought. And yeah, they just seem to be, we use the word unstoppable in the introduction, but they really are at the moment.
Yeah, they are. And I think, you know, credit to them for turning it around after that dodgy first 20 minutes or so. And really, Leopold's first goal was against the run of play, but it was a fantastic one. Great long range finish from 25 yards. Great first touch. And from that point onwards, really, Chelsea were dominant for most of the game. Harder was really good in this game, actually. Nice assist from her for Sam Kerr. And in the second half, there was a right and corner that was well worked. Harder part of that effort that managed to secure a penalty, which Leupolz converted to make it 4-0 for Chelsea. So I think, yeah, a comprehensive win by Chelsea. But look, let's credit Rhianne Skinner, because for the first 20 minutes or so, it looked like she'd worked out the ultimate game plan. It really did. I was sort of sat there watching it thinking, my goodness me, this is really, really something. Because Spurs basically were playing most of their balls through the middle. Caris Harrop was, you know, part of that central action, manipulating the space left there by Chelsea, because their players were being dragged wide. So I thought that was great from Spurs. Obviously, Chelsea quickly cottoned onto it and made an adjustment to their play. But I don't want to completely diss Spurs. They were with a third choice keeper in Aurora Mikkelsen. And yeah, not a great start for Abby McManus. We should also note that Cho has also moved to the side as well from West Ham. So I think Tottenham just have to move on from this one, really.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right about their game plan. Their game plan was really, really good. And the thing that's actually struck me about watching Chelsea this season is I don't think they've ever really looked like a team, like a unit. They to me, that you can tell that they switch players a lot. They rotate personnel. They played a bit of a 4-4-2 in this one, which, as you said, Kate, they were getting outnumbered in midfield. But they've got so many talented individuals, it almost doesn't matter. In fact, I was watching this game and I tweeted after one of Tottenham's chances, in a minute, someone like Pernilla Harder's just going to smack one in the top corner from 25 yards. And actually, it was Melanie Leupolz that did exactly that. But yeah, I still don't think they really look like a cohesive team yet. I still think they're going to win the league, though.
I don't know. I don't know whether I agree with that, Tim, because the thing that I think that Chelsea can do, and they did it in this match, is that they can kill games off with a couple of goals in a couple of minutes. And that's exactly what they did. They got two goals in 2 minutes, didn't they, in that first half? And they are the one team in the league, I think, even when they're facing tough opposition and having a bit of a test, they make one breakthrough and then they go for it and they get another one. And I think you have to have team play to be able to do that.
Chelsea now 2 years unbeaten, 26 wins, 7 draws. I know you've been tweeting a lot about Arsenal and the unbeaten run of the Invincibles, Tim. Are you making comparisons here?
I just wanted to put on record that though it's a WSL record, the top flight record is 108 games unbeaten by the all-conquering Arsenal ladies team, yes.
So they've still got some way to go. We should mention as well, there's a great piece up on The Athletic from Casey Wyatt on the Chelsea team versus the Arsenal Invincibles. And actually, I had a good read of Molly Hudson's piece in The Times, where she talks about how Chelsea have created this dominance and that the seed may have been planted with the arrival of Xi all those years ago, 8 years ago, and how really that was a completely turning point, yeah, for the club. And actually, Emma Hayes believes that Xi is probably the most influential player in the history of WSL. I don't know if we agree with that.
She has to be right up there. And I think she's been integral to everything that Chelsea have gone on to achieve. She is that heartbeat of the side. She makes everything tick. In terms of midfield and things going through her, I don't think there's any other player like her in the league. And I think you'd be struggling to find someone in Europe, actually. She's 29 now. And I really think that if this this target of getting a Champions League trophy, that they've got to get that while she is in the side in the next 2 to 3 years. And I would say that just provides a bit of urgency around that trophy. I don't know whether you agree, Tim.
Yeah, I think so. And I think Chelsea are on a bit of a mission, aren't they, to win that Champions League. But with G, with respect to her, if you were compiling an all-time WSL 11, she would absolutely be in it. And she could probably go into it in a couple of different positions because she's played as a number 10. She's dropped back a little bit recently and she just dictates things in midfield. And I think if you were drawing a line of Chelsea's kind of succession to where they are at the moment in the WSL, the signing of G is where you would start that line, if that makes sense.
Well, let's move on to the next fixture then. And Manchester United kept themselves within touching distance of Chelsea with a comfortable 2-0 win against Everton. Ella Toon grabbed her 6th WSL goal of the season and US star Kristen Press added a second just before half time. This was always going to be an interesting fixture to look at, actually, Tim. The arrival of Valerie Govan, or the re-arrival. She was back for this game for Everton, and actually a new signing for Manchester United in the loan deal of Alicia Lehmann as well. So some extra personnel to throw into this one. I think I was a bit disappointed by Everton, though, I have to say.
Yeah, I think so as well. Particularly in the first half, one of Manchester United's first attacks, and Leah Galton had loads of space on the left-hand side. And you think, come on, giving Leah Galton lots of space on the left-hand side is recipe for trouble. I think in fairness to Everton, you can tell that this is a team with a lot of new players in it. That really came across to me, and they improved quite a bit in the second half. But I just think at the moment, maybe they're a season away from really being that kind of cohesive team unit. They've signed some really, really good players, and there were some positive signs towards the end of the game. But really, Manchester United killed this nice and early.
It panged to me of Everton trying to play the way that they wanted to play, trying to recreate some of that early form. They got Govan back in the side and they were trying to play the football that they wanted, rather than matching and thinking about the way that Manchester United, who are going for the title at the moment, were going to play. And I thought that was really naive of them, because they gave so much space and time to players who were on the wings. And that's exactly where Manchester United want to be. They want to use the width of the pitch. And I thought Everton were actually pretty narrow. And I don't know what that was trying to achieve, because you give them time and space, and we've seen the deliveries of crosses, like you say, Leah Galton, but Ella Toon's pace as well. Kristen Press, never ever question her being offside, by the way. She times those runs to perfection. She is absolutely brilliant at it. And I just thought it played into their hands, rather than trying to counter what Manchester United were going to bring. They were just sort of hell-bent on playing the way they wanted to, and I didn't think that was going to work.
Yeah, I completely agree. I watched them play against Arsenal just before Christmas, and it was very, very similar. They played that narrow midfield diamond, and Arsenal just went down the flanks every single time. And Everton, they're not quite at a stage, Everton, where they can take on teams like Arsenal and Manchester United like that. They do have to think, I think, a little bit more about their opponents in games like that. And I agree. I think they were a little bit naive in this one.
My next question on Everton, really, for both of you. They're now in 5th on 17 points, quite some way behind Chelsea, and Man United on 32 points at the top of the table. So do we just take it that Everton are a mid-table side for this season, with perhaps more to concentrate on, really, than trying to make a real play for anywhere near those Champions League places?
I think so for this season, yes. And you can see they really gave their all for the FA Cup earlier in the season, and they kind of sacrificed Govan for that, played her when she wasn't really fit, which I understand. I think that was what they were really, really going for. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with the FA Cup this year yet, but I think for this season, yes, and really they're building for the next couple of seasons.
They started the season as well being the chasers, trying to get into being considered for Europe or closing in on your Arsenals, Man City's, now United's and Chelsea's. And I actually think it's turned on its head and now they're being chased. I think it's Reading and Spurs who think, oh, can we catch Everton this season and overtake them in the table? And I'm not sure whether that's sitting well with them. That there's certainly a lack of confidence since that defeat in the Cup. And I think Govan being back is great for them, and they might find a little run of form.
Well, also, Lindsay, having Jill Scott back, we haven't mentioned her yet. And
there was
really
one shot that she tried. It didn't quite come off, but it was a fantastic effort. Yeah.
But you know, she was ever present in this game as well. And she certainly got every single reason to be going for that Team GB place at the Olympics. So one huge credit to Everton is that they have, you know, grabbed her. Govan's back, as I've said. So, you know, I think it is probably now about sort of making sure that they don't slip too much further down the table. And as you say, Tim, probably a working project more than anything specifically to aim for this season.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We'll round off this weekend's action with the final fixture, which was Manchester City 4, West Ham 0. And City kept applying the pressure against West Ham to ensure they achieved a fifth straight league win of the season. The visitors were well disciplined, though. And after Caroline Weir's early goal, it did take until nearly half-time for Georgia Stanway to get another. City's dominant possession led to second-half goals from Ellen White and Rose Lavelle, and they rounded off a 4-0 win. And I think the place to start here, Tim, is maybe the gulf between these sides. We've seen Manchester City put seven past their last couple of opposition towards the bottom of the table. And then West Ham, is it good that they only conceded four in comparison? But I just thought that there was a real difference in class.
Yeah, definitely. And again, West Ham, they've gone down a new road with a new manager who wants to play in a different way to Matt Beard. And I think that's going to take at least the rest of this season to settle in. With City as well, they've really hit their stride. Now they look intimidating, quite frankly, says the Arsenal fan who are playing Manchester City next. I think the really impressive thing about City, I criticised some of their transfer business over the summer. I wondered if they should have brought another striker in. But what they're doing is they're spreading goals around.
Yeah, they
Chloe
just
Kelly.
Don't need it.
Yeah, Stanway, Lauren Hemp, Caroline Weir as well. They're just getting goals from everywhere and they just look like a threat every time they go forward.
And I love the way that Lauren Hemp and Chloe Kelly were working down the flanks in this one. Chloe Kelly's crosses are just brilliant, and she'll also have a go at goal as well. I thought it was quite funny at the end of the game. Gareth Taylor said that the side had to move things around and that the personnel were a bit low. I thought to myself, what a funny thing to say, because you just could not see it at all, that he was sort of slightly kind of bemoaning that. But yeah, I thought, you know, really, really impressive from City. And we saw a first start for Abby Del Kemper as well. She made her debut at centre half alongside Steph Horton. And even when you know, think about those two centre halves together, that's going to be such an exciting prospect. And we saw the start of that in this game as well. So, yeah. And actually, one to mention too, Rose Lavelle, who perhaps, you know, of all the US imports, Tim, hasn't had such a great time here. And that could largely be argued because she's being played out of position, perhaps. But she came on as a sub and scored. And I was pleased for her with that. Why do you think she's not perhaps had the same amount of consistency behind her performances that other US imports have had?
So this was one of the signings I questioned the most. First of all, I didn't really see a place for her in this Manchester City team. I think she's kind of better as a number 10, and they don't really play with one.
They
play a lot through their wide players. Also, her injury, we knew before she came, her recent injury record is not great, and I don't think she's always been fit. This is one of the signings I looked at and thought, did they really need Rose Lavelle? Should they have gone and got like an out-and-out number nine? But I do think, to be fair to her, it's largely down to fitness. She just hasn't really been able to put the games together, and probably not in a position that she really likes.
And I think not in her natural position, I think.
No, and I think some of these US players, I think, might stick around. Like, I think Tobin Heath and Kristen Press might, and Sam Mewis maybe, but Rose Lavelle is one I think will definitely
we'll
go back to the
back.
NWSL.
There's actually a really interesting piece online from Jessie Parker Humphreys on Del Kemper, her reasons for signing a 2.5 deal, because that's where she's different, of course, to a lot of these US loanees. She's actually talked about the differences between the two leagues. There's a lot more tactical awareness, she said, in the WSL. The way people play here is very structured. Ball possession is very valued in the WSL, which is something that's different than in America. So I thought that was an interesting feedback there from one of the US imports. With West Ham, they actually were still pretty organised in that 30 minutes between Caroline Weir's goal and Georgia Stanway's goal. They were actually okay. They kind of actually held it together, I think. It took Stanway's goal for them to just sort of crumple a little bit. So, you know, credit to them, I think, for being disciplined enough during that period of time. But Ollie Harder was right at the end of the game. He sort of joked a bit, really, and he said that the game gives his side an indication of the gap, and then he just went, the chasm his side needed to close. And that admission from the manager, not just of a gap, he called it a chasm, the gap between his team and Manchester City. And that tells you a lot. He obviously realises the task he's got, but I'm not sure I would have said that necessarily.
I think City's a great example of where there are some defensive issues in the WSL, I think, because they're a great example of getting it right by bringing in players. But, you know, Dahl Kemper's had to be bought in. Steph Horton has been very reliable and playing for years. Gemma Bonner has been in the WSL for years and years. Who are the new central partnerships or central defenders that are coming through that are really staking a claim against any of these sorts of players at the moment in the WSL? Who are we bringing through that's brilliant? You know, Abby McManus was talked about as to be one of the next, but I just don't think she's at that same level. I think that debut performance from her at Spurs showed that, I think. And where are they?
Well, I think the only thing I'd retaliate to that with is that Aoife Mannion's back, which is great news. Obviously part of that defensive line. She's been out with her ACL injury since 2019. So when we talk about the future of City's defence and how they've had to kind of buy in to create what they've got, I think yes, and that's how you win titles and that's how you go for those Champions League places. But it's not that they're not concentrating on the future of where their back line might be at. I'm just pleased to see Aoife Mannion back, pleased for City and also pleased from an international perspective as well. We're just moving on to some more general lines, and I think something I wanted to flag up but for you, Tim, just to look at how much impact it might have, is that there'll be call-ups from the USA squad members that are currently playing in the WSL into their She Believes squad. So Sam Mewis, Rose Lavelle, Abidel Kemper. We know that Kristen Press also in that, actually. Tobin Heath will miss with that ankle injury. How much impact is that going to have?
Yeah, I think it could have quite a big impact, not least as well, because I think February the 28th was penciled in as an FA Cup weekend, which is obviously not going to happen now. But I think that weekend will become a bit like this weekend just gone, and you'll get a lot of rearranged games. So it'd be interesting to see whether any of those teams actually end up with WSL fixtures that week. My understanding is that there's a Manchester derby on the 12th of February and that they should all make that and then fly out straight after. But obviously there's the isolating as well on the other side of travel. It could be really disruptive, and that could really throw things open in things like the title race, for example. Just these kind of little things can throw things open again potentially.
Does that strengthen Chelsea's case then? Is that?
I think so.
Yeah, okay.
I think so.
Also for Aston Villa, Mana Iwabuchi will have international commitments in February as well. So, you know, despite the fact that she's a great signing for Villa, they will have to do without her for a period of time too.
They're going to miss her. I think she made an immediate impact, didn't she? Birmingham City didn't play at the weekend, but it has been a good season so far for the Blues under new manager Carla Ward. And one of the team's shining lights has been speaking to us, goalkeeper Hannah Hampton. Kate caught up with her earlier.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hannah, welcome to the Offside Rule WSL edition. It's great to get you on. And it's also great to get you on when you're in such great form as well. We've noted on more than a few games now, you know, the 11 saves against Arsenal, the 7 saves against Manchester United. Everyone's talking about you, and rightly so. How are you feeling about how it's going?
I think it's going well. I definitely can do better, and I know I can. So I'm not, like, really pleased with performances as everyone else is. I'm just trying to get my head down and focus on my as well as I can and try and improve the best I can. to help the team out, really.
And it's that contribution to the team in that, you know, no one else bears that responsibility, really. You're the only one between the sticks, and you're still young as well, and you seem to be happy to sort of take that responsibility on, particularly, you know, when it's hard to get points on the board sometimes in the WSL. You come up against, you know, some of those top teams like Chelsea, City, Arsenal, and it's hard. It takes a lot of work to get anything from those games, or just to keep yourself in the game.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of pressure on myself being quite young, but I do like the pressure. I seem to thrive under it, really. It's hard because for us as a team, it's a matter of just trying to stick to a game plan, because we know there are so many games where we're going to be out of possession for the majority of the game that we've got to really focus on our roles in defence, which I think we've been managing quite well in some games. There's been some games where we've obviously lacked concentration, and they might have, other teams have obviously exploited that, but we're getting better. And I think that's one thing that we've really taken pride in our performances, is how defensively secure we are, that we can really push on.
And you say that you thrive under the pressure. Just give me a few of your tricks, because I'm probably twice your age. And I don't think I've learned how to thrive under pressure yet. But does it come naturally to you? Is it something that you've worked on? How are you able for it to sit so well with you?
I just think I've always been chucked in at the deep end. Even without football. I mean, I moved to Spain when I was young, didn't know Spanish, but I've managed to get on well. I had to learn it as quick as I could. Coming back into English schools, didn't know anything, didn't even know English. So I had to sort myself out in there. Then just going into different teams, going from an outfielder to a keeper, I've had to deal with that as well. So I think I've just been chucked in the deep end that many times, so many situations, that I've just gotten used to it, really.
The decision for you to go from outfield to keeper, that was at Stoke, wasn't it? I think before you came to Birmingham, it was Mark Skinner who took you to Birmingham, someone we've spoken about a lot on the pod. We obviously know his other half, Laura Bassett, really, really well. Was that a tough decision for you at the time? I know it's normal for sort of players to progress throughout positions, but being a goalie, for me, is kind of a bigger decision almost.
Yeah, it was hard. I think just because I really enjoyed playing outfield. I didn't even know how it came about. Still, today, I don't even know how I ended up going in goal, but it's turned out for the better, really. But no, it was a hard decision at the time for me, for sure.
Yeah. Tell me about Carla Ward. What's she brought to the side? We have spoken to her on the podcast. We know her fairly well. We know what her attributes are. But from your player perspective, tell me what she's brought in for you guys.
I think from the get-go, she gave an ambition to the squad of what she wanted to achieve in this club. And I don't think that's what we had previously. We had it under Mark, definitely. But obviously, when we went in the transitional period between managers, we didn't really know where we stood as a team. So when she came in, I think when she first started, she had 8 players in training. So she really hit home to the 8 players of what she wants to achieve, how the togetherness has to be the best it has ever been for you to perform as well as you are on the pitch. I don't know, there's something about her that just brings the best out in everyone. It's like she wants to know the person before the player. And for me, that's, as a manager, that's what I want. I want them to not just tell me what I need to do on the pitch, just have it, them give an interest in you really shows that they're there for a long time. They want to take notice in you. They want to get to know you better. And I think if they do that, then you're always going to want to perform for them on the pitch and buy into what they want.
If we take a look at the season, I think, you know, we spoke at the time how we thought it was unfair that you had to pull out of the fixture against Tottenham in early January because of a shortage of players available. And that you know, has caused a few issues in terms of getting results. And, you know, Carla and the team have been brilliant. You guys have been brilliant trying to get around that, trying to deal with injuries and sort of COVID issues as well. So that game you had to pull out of, so you weren't able to postpone it. So there's moving on from that, and then there's moving into the rest of the season as well.
I think you're in eighth, aren't you, now on 10 points. Where's the target for the season? Just bearing in mind what a weird season it's been really so far, and you sort of have to expect the unexpected. Have you still got a clear target there?
Yeah, definitely. As a team, we set out to reach double figures on points. That's what we wanted to do from the get-go, because we struggled a lot last year. So we just wanted to hit double figures, and we've done that now. So now we're pushing on again. Can we double it, or can we get more than double? Because we know what we went wrong against teams that we played before, and we can adapt that now, and we can really push on. So I think we just want to get double points and hopefully challenge with the, like, give them a tough game, the top four teams. But obviously we're not going to be near them yet, so we just got to keep building and closing the gap.
Does it motivate you as a team when perhaps other sides have been able to postpone games because of COVID cases that we could argue may have been avoidable, and yet you guys had to forfeit your game?
It's hard. There sometimes there's a sense of unfairness on certain clubs, or however it goes. You never know what it's like in certain clubs or what the situation they've got to face. But I think as a team, we've just stayed focused, really, and we know our end goal, like I said, and that's what we're working towards. If it's an extra week training, an extra week no game, then it's more time for us to work on what we want to succeed in the end. So we take it in a way to just improve, really.
You're up against Everton on Sunday. Tell us about that one. I think, you know, Everton had that rich run of form, didn't they, at the beginning of the season, and they've fallen by the wayside a little bit. Tell me how you're going to approach this one.
It's going to be a tough game, and we know it is. They've got quality players in their squad, and they've gone and brought more in the transfer window. So it's going to be hard. I think, again, all we've got to really do is, if we work on our defensive security, then we can pick up points. We've always said if you keep a clean sheet, you're at least guaranteed 1 point. And that's what we've really focused on this year.
Now, Everton have got Sandy McKeever in goal. There's Ellie Roebuck at City. She's only 21, you're 20. And she's just signed a new 3-year deal with City as well, Ellie. We heard about that earlier today. So many good young English goalkeepers at the moment. I feel a bit gutted for you, but there is your challenge, isn't it? There is your challenge. You've got all these fantastic goalkeepers. What's your plan when you look at yourself and you think how, because you've obviously played for the unders, we know you're good, we know you're really good. How do you navigate that, the fact that there are so many young, talented players in your position?
I think you've just got to take a step back at it. You can't think of it as, I want to be better than her, because we're all helping each other improve. If I'm performing the best I can, then it's helping Sandy and Ellie push their standards and push their performances on the pitch. So as much as we're a competition against each other, it's also positive that we're helping drive each other's standards. And Ellie and Sandy deserve everything they get, because honestly, they're the best, two of the best people off the pitch, and they are absolutely incredible on the pitch. So whoever succeeds, whoever wins whatever, then I'm happy for either of them, because everyone deserves what they get. They're so nice people, and they've really helped me in the England setup for sure.
You obviously called up into the She Believes squad last year as a training player. You're part of last year's November training camp as well. So you're definitely getting in and around there, and it will be lovely to kind of see you progress through that as well. What about the legacy left by players like Karen Bardsley and Carly Telford and Siobhan Chamberlain? Just tell me perhaps how they've partly been responsible on an international level for getting to the point where we've got, you know, where we are spoilt for young English talent in terms of the goalkeeper position.
It's not even at international level as well, it's at club. Obviously, there was so much scrutiny on women goalkeepers, on not being able to do certain things. And I think the likes of Carly Telford and Karen Bardsley and Mary Earps or whoever the keepers are in the league have really kind of have closed that gap, have showed that women goalkeepers are capable and they can do things. In an international level, they are the most down-to-earth people possible. You've got a problem, you go up to them, they help you out straight away. I think, I know as soon as I went into the She Believes squad, Carly Telford put her arm around me and guided me around. saying you need to be here at this time, you need to do this at this time. I had no idea what I was doing, and if it wasn't for the likes of Carly Telford or the more experienced players in the team, then I'd be absolutely lost and wouldn't know what I was doing. So I'm always grateful for that, and their legacy is always going to live on. It's always going to be the group that won, always the group that started, it kind of like gave the women's game more exposure to everyone, is their group, and their legacy is going to live on for a while now.
Well, listen, we wish you all the best of luck. It's great to see you having such a good season. We'll be cheering Birmingham on as well from our home studios. Thanks for joining us on the Offside Rule. Thank you, Hannah Hampton.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Offside Rule WSL edition from Ruddy Deans Media and The Athletic.
Kate speaking to Birmingham City goalkeeper Hannah Hampton there, who's been having a brilliant season. Moving on to the news lines that have emerged this week. Former England and Chelsea defender Claire Rafferty has joined Lewis FC's training squad. Did you all spot this? Because it seems a bit of hysteria building, but it's just training.
Yeah,
no plan to play in fixtures.
It was one of my favourite news lines of the week last week. I did get a bit excited, but I wondered whether it was a fitness thing or, you know, we have spoken to Raf in depth in the past, and I know she loves playing, you know, hoops. She was, you know, after she retired, she did question it a fair bit, but now I think this is just her keeping fit, keeping part of the action there.
And she has been on the board, hasn't she, since December 2019 there, so got that connection with the club. Other news, Tim, this is a big one. Vicarage Road will be the host stadium for the Conti Cup final on Sunday the 14th of March. Good choice.
Yeah, I think so. It's just a real shame for me that Arsenal won't be in it, because that's a slightly more convenient ground than some of the ones we've played on in recent years. But no, fantastic. And obviously Watford are a club who I think have a decent history with their women's team as well. It's just a real shame that there'll be no supporters there. And that kind of makes it not irrelevant, but... Do you know what I mean? It's just not the same without fans there.
I met their general manager many years ago when I still played. And when I say played, I mean, I didn't play at any particularly brilliant level. I played within London leagues and I did train a little bit with Brentford for a while. And the general manager was like, do you want to come and do a trial? I thought, I won't embarrass myself to go and do a trial. The Women's Super League and Championship will begin trialling concussion substitutes from the 6th of February. That's along with the Premier League as well. And a big step forward in trying to deal with this and trying something different. You have to applaud the fact that they brought this in so quickly off the back of a couple of really bad incidents.
I think so too. So there are now two concussion substitutes that you can make on top of the normal three. So yes, it is to be applauded. And good move, that one. 6th of Feb is when that comes into place. Should we take a look at the Conti Cup semi-finals? That takes place Wednesday 3rd of Feb. We've got Chelsea up against West Ham and Bristol City up against Leicester City. Your thoughts, please, Tim, on these?
I mean, really, it looks like it's Chelsea's competition,
doesn't it,
if we're honest. But the real sense of intrigue, I think, is, with all due respect to West Ham, who they play in the final. And that's... The Conti Cup has actually been really interesting this season. It's been quite strange in the way the group stages were put together and the rules were kind of changed halfway through. But one thing it's really done is to just put some different teams in the mix, and whoever wins that other semi-final between Bristol City and Leicester, that's going to be a huge occasion for either side. And that, to me, almost feels like a bit of a final. I would fully expect Chelsea to beat West Ham and to go on and win the competition. But I'm really enthused to see who gets to the final.
I fancy Leicester, actually, Hoops. Do you?
No, actually.
Ooh, okay.
I think this is written in the stars that Matt Beard will go up against his former club, by being Bristol City women head coach, and maybe even, you know, giving them a shout of getting some silverware. I mean, it looks like it's going to the holders, Chelsea, doesn't it? When you look at we talked about chasms in class, I think between those three teams and Chelsea, there definitely is. But then in the cup competition, over 90 minutes, anything can
happen. Are you
going to
say anything can happen? Yes. Yeah, why not? Throw it in. Let's take a brief look at the fixtures ahead for the weekend as well. Villa take on Spurs, Manchester United women against Reading, Chelsea against Brighton, Everton, Birmingham, Arsenal, Manchester City, West Ham, Bristol City. Tim, the Arsenal fan, slightly worried about this one, Tim.
Yeah, absolutely. Arsenal have got a really good record at home against Manchester City. They won this fixture the last 3 years in the WSL and won a Conti Cup game in that time as well. But I just think having not played for a few weeks with Manchester City in the type of form they're in, from an Arsenal perspective, I'm really looking at the first 20 minutes, and that's when I'm quite scared about, because I think it will take Arsenal a little bit of time to find their rhythm, whereas City are in a really good rhythm. So for Arsenal, crucial they get through that first 20 minutes for me.
All eyes on that one. Hoops, a return to West Ham for Matt Beard and his new Bristol side.
I think this is a huge week for Matt Beard at Bristol City, because they've got that semi-final of the Cup. And although I think they could come through that against Leicester, I do wonder whether this is the more important fixture that they should be focusing on. And it's whether he feels he's got that squad rotation and the fitness in the squad for two games in a week. But I think West Ham United offers a very good opportunity. He will know them inside out. And I fancy Bristol City to get something in this game. And even if it's a point, it keeps them right in it, doesn't it, to stay in the league?
It does. All right, let's wrap things up right there. You can find us on all the socials, by the way, at Offside Rule Pod. Don't forget the website, offsiderulepodcast.com. Some great stuff on there. I've already mentioned the Abidel Kemper piece. There are five things to sum up from the WSL and plenty more besides in terms of women's coverage on the website. So do check it out.
Yeah, you can also leave us a review wherever you get the show. It would be fantastic if you could leave us 5 stars and just a few words of encouragement. We take them with us.
Keeps you going in lockdown, doesn't it? We must say a big thank you to Daddy Tim Stillman. Your daughter's 6 months old today, so we're going to let you go and prepare for that big birthday bash, Tim.
Yes, thank you very much. We've got, she's not eating yet, but mummy and daddy
tough luck
have
to
cake.
Her.
Yes, mummy and daddy have cake prepared.
And well, devoured.
Happy birthday. Yeah, happy birthday to her. Thanks everyone for listening. We are back, by the way, Tuesday, 9th of February. Until then, bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Offside Rule WSL edition, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Offside Rule at offsiderulepodcast.com and by following at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Offside Rule WSL edition is a Muddy Knees Media production.
The Athletic.